Hello and welcome to the Pals Anime Lounge, a podcast where a bunch of pals get together to talk about anime. The pals are Artura.
Hello, everyone.
And Gauze.
Hey.
And I am your host, Ace. In today's episode, we're talking about Guilty Gear Strive Dual Rulers, a series that's only a few episodes in. Since this is based on a video game, we've decided to cover it using the three-episode rule. Like previous podcasts about new shows, the synopsis won't be as detailed, so do check out the anime if we've piqued your interest.
I can barely afford one ruler.
It was animated by Sons Again, the studio behind Sakura Wars, the animation from 2020, and D-Side Traumeri, the animation, which we did a podcast in 2021. Guilty Gear Strive Dual Rulers currently has a My Animalist score of 5.81.
Oh my god, they're working on the Rooster Fighter adaptation.
It's Rooster Fighter.
It's a Japanese web manga series written and illustrated by Shu Sakuratani. It has been serialized on Heroes Inc. Comiplex manga website since December 2020.
Why did it sound like we just activated Gorth GPT?
Guilty Gear Strive is a fighting game that originally came out in 2021, but re-released a few months ago on Switch. Oh, and it won awards during Game Grin's Game of the Year 2020.
Unfortunately, not for soundtrack, which is the best part, arguably.
No, it got a nod for Best New Character, Best Multiplayer, Best Sequel, and Game of the Year. My short synopsis for this is Guilty Gear, Guilty Gear, Guilty Gear!
No. I refuse to let that be.
That's a callback to our Tekken episode.
Well, you're going to like my overview of episode one.
Tora?
After the war between enhanced humans known as Gear and regular ones concluded in favor of mankind, trouble stirs anew.
And goes.
We explore humanity and racism in Guilty Gear while some people are upset over Bridget's gender.
I mean, they weren't in the episodes, but... Some people.
No, I mean not people in the show.
Yeah, they actually accept Bridget as she is.
Yeah. Sorry, maybe I should have come up with something better, but yeah, it's kind of a thing where there's a few people that are just keep arguing about this shit. And it's just ridiculous at this point.
You say people, but you mean transphobes. They are not people. They are transphobes.
Whoa, how dare you?
They might be transphobes that don't realize they are transphobes, because I think people are arguing that, like, the context is different, but it's like... I mean, the intention behind the character's conception might have been different way back when, but it's recontextualized by real world. Like, there's added context to whatever was the original intent. Well, whatever. Let's move on.
I have a question. Was she trans since the very first release? Or because I wasn't sure and I wanted to know.
So the backstory is that what was it again?
So Bridget was originally created as a male character who dressed up as a female in female clothes, and as the games went on, it was decided that Bridget. And in one of the endings in the game and like official announcements and stuff, it was decided that Bridget. Had actually realized that they were trans, so started using she, her pronouns and all that. And
okay.
People tried to say no, because in Japan that it actually means something different when, like, in interviews and stuff, they specifically said, yeah, Bridget's trans.
So,
crying out loud. Sorry, Gorse, go on.
Sorry. So the backstory from what I remember is that in the village that Bridget is from, having twins or siblings of same sex is it's a superstition. It's considered unlucky or something. So Bridget was raised as a female. And eventually she becomes a bounty hunter. And there's something about, like, wanting to appear tough, or bounty hunters having to be male. So she says, no, I'm actually a man. But her, like, the way she dresses, the way she acts is feminine.
I see. Thank you so much.
There's more nuance to that, I think, but I don't remember everything at the moment. And yeah, later they just elaborated on that. I never felt that it went against what Bridget is supposed to be, what they did with the most recent game.
Well, I really appreciate it, because I was curious, but I didn't know. So thank you for your insight.
No worries.
With that out of the way, the synopsis for these three episodes, please take us away, girls.
Okay, episode one. We start with a short recap explaining the setting and outlining the main theme of the show. Tekken! I mean human nature. We learn that humanity sucks because it always comes up with way to destroy. Most recently by creating humanoid weapons, gears, which ended up at war with mankind. But we also learn that humanity doesn't suck because a war hero, Kai Kisk, falls in love with a gear, Dizzy, and becomes a king to create a world safe for her and their son, who loves food.
Okay, my notes here say he was the chief of the International Police Force, and they let him just go around fighting, and in all caps, he became king?
I mean, don't most kings just take the throne rather than get it until eventually it becomes birthright?
I'm sure it's, like, well outlined in the lore. But if that baffles you, then the nation that he's a king of has three kings at the same time.
Yeah,
What I found funny about this whole scene was the fact that so they introduced the mother, whose main priority is the family, and the father, whose main priority is the family, and the son, whose main priority is food. And I was I can see that.
It's kind of, I found it funny because it's kind of a dig at Saul Bad Guy, who ended up raising Sin. Like, he fucked up so bad. Their son loves food. That's his priority.
I did write that I get the feeling that Sin is the Goku of the series. Very strong, very naive, likes food.
I have to say, though, just real quick about his character design, I really like, because Sin doesn't look like the typical personality that's kind of wide-eyed and naive. He's just kind of too buff for it, and it looks kind of jarring in contrast to what these sorts of archetypes usually look like in anime, and I really appreciated that.
Want to know another funny fact about him? He's 5 year old.
Oh, I'm what? Sorry, what?
He's five! He's canonically 5 year old.
They didn't mention that.
No, they don't mention it in this, but yeah, he, like, I assume that, I think gears mature really fast.
That explains why the king aged like fine wine then.
They gave Saul Bad Guy, put a pin in that name, they gave him backstory, but they didn't never mention the kid is five.
Well, Saul is really old because he used to be a gear, but Kai is actually human.
But see, so that's when they showed the they showed that, you know, Sin was already kind of old. Well, but I assumed was kind of old. And then they showed the father again. I was like, huh, he hasn't aged much, huh? That explains it.
Yeah, I don't know how old Kai is. But Dizzy's also not that old, I think. Because, again, artificial human. Yeah, but we're not going to delve into that. Should I move on? Opening plays. da da da. It's good music. Because yeah, it's quite like that. I wonder if it was composed by Daisuke Shitawari, who's the composer for the series and also the a big, I think, the director of the games, one of the creators of the series.
There was something about the opening that it's kind of like subliminal brainwashing, just images flashing up for 2 or 3 frames.
Yeah, it was actually really like it could pass off as a music video. I think we cut to Sin and his adoptive father hunting a giant bear, a threat to a nearby village. After a comical chase, Sin sees the bear is caring for its cubs and decides to let it go. But as Sol says, it's totally fine because the bear was so intimidated by the overgrown 5-year-old, it won't come back to the area.
That was some Looney Tunes action there. running towards a mountain and a cliff and then just running on top of the bear as it falls off.
Indeed. Sol reminds Sin about the ceremony he's supposed to attend. We move to Illyria Castle, where Sin's parents are finally having their formal wedding. We get introduced to Johnny, Dizzy's former caretaker and a well-known pervert, as well as Nerval, a racist fuck who gives Dizzy a suspicious handshake. Oh no!
Hang on. You are doing the scene disservice. We're introduced to Johnny!
Johnny! Yeah, yes, I love that too.
They did. They
like the narrator's favorite character, Johnny.
They're doing the for the fighting game introduction of a character. Like, actually, I think they use the exact same font for character names as they use in character reveals for like updates, DLCs, and
Smash Brothers
trailers, whatever. The festivities get interrupted when another gear-hating person, a woman calling herself Unica, attacks Dizzy, pushing her to lose control over her destructive power. Sin arrives just in time to witness Kai seal away himself and Dizzy behind a barrier before her defense system unleashes the devastating attack. Did I miss anything here?
No, but Johnny!
Johnny! I also want to point out, I can't remember that voice actor's name, but like the delivery is really over the top for Johnny. It hits you like whiplash when he first speaks. And stuff. In the aftermath, the second king of Illyria, they have multiple of them at the same time, like 3. That's my note. I think it's Kai, it's Leo, and it's Daryl. They're the 3 kings. I don't know how that works. I guess they make all decisions together. I wonder if that would work.
I mean, I guess I don't think it would, because considering the fact that you just have to have 2 corrupt kings and 1 good king, and then that's it. GG.
They're not corrupt.
Oh no! But you said if you wanted if it would work, I assume you meant having 3 kings.
Yeah, yeah.
So if there were 2 corrupt kings and only 1 good king, then that's it. There would be no more discussion on anything because they would always win.
Yeah. But on the other hand, they have a tiebreaker. If there was just 2 of them and they would disagree, then nothing would get ever done.
That's a good point.
The second king of Illyria puts Valentine's sisters in charge of guarding the castle while Sol takes Sin to find Unica and learn her motives with wandering samurai Baiken also on her track.
My note here is dangerously close to unexpected nudity at the end of the episode.
No, it's they do very well with like seamlessly editing in her huge cleavage. You almost don't notice.
It bounces.
But like during action scenes, it's like it's not completely fan servicey, because like you can like pan to her to her cleavage and like to her holding her sword on her belt. So it's very tasteful.
I can't believe
I went to that.
My counterpoint is in the next episode, we see up her skirt twice in action sequences.
But she has underwear.
Her underpants are bandages.
I mean, she's a wandering samurai. What else she's going to wear? Oh, I also had a translation note that I think was meant to the start of the scene at the castle, where we get like some people talking about, oh, the queen is a gear, blah, blah, blah. And the narrator says that it's a taboo for human and gear to be in a relationship. And I noticed that apparently the word for taboo in kanji is read kinky. So humans doing it with gears is a kinky thing.
I did heard kinky. I thought, wait, is kinky taboo?
Yeah, I heard it twice in that sentence, so I had to look it up. What? Because there's, I think in not kanji, it's just taboo, T-A-B-U, but in kanji, it's kinky. Fun Japanese lesson. Moving on. Episode 2. We open with Sol and Sin said they're heading to Washington for end of war commemoration festival, where they suspect Unikama is Shrek next. Sure enough, she appears just as the president declares a mass anti-gear weapon being decommissioned to celebrate peace. While flying over Washington, Sol decides to eject his son out of the aircraft like a regular Heihachi Mishima, and they get to the ground just in time to stop Unica from stealing the key to the weapon. Sol and Sin fight back against Unica and her minions with the help of arriving Baiken and a female. It's all caps. I had to read it like that. I'm not sure why it's all caps. I think someone else wrote that. Bounty hunter Bridget, who was there to hassle tourists with a game of three cups, one yo-yo.
Sorry, going back to when Sol and Sin are on the aircraft, Sol's fixing something and he says it's to replace the superpowers that he lost. And it's like, you had superpowers?
Yeah, I do feel like there are some things that were not touched on enough, like the fact that the protagonist is 5 years old.
And also when they arrive and they he throws the key back to the president, the narrator says, Sol and the president once fought side by side aboard the flying White House. And then it just moves on. No, that needs explaining. We need context.
No, you come back right now. You can't just say flying White House and move on.
At the very beginning of the episode where they are riding the bike, it also has like a little cut in that says that he lost the flame of corruption, a divine seed, blah blah blah. I mean, you can infer that he lost power because I think it's prompted by Sin asking if he's gonna be okay coming along.
He lost the seed of corruption. Don't worry about it. Wait, the what?
The White House was flying at one point. Don't worry though.
It was flying. It was funny. Sol and Sin fight back against Unica and her minions with the help of arriving Baiken and a bounty hunter Bridget, who was there to hassle tourists with a game of three cups, one yo-yo. I already read that. When Sin clashes with Unica, the two find each other matching each other's every move and share a vague vision. I don't know. I didn't catch any detail from the vision. Thank you.
I think that's on purpose. They'll flesh out throughout the series, but just when Sin gets eaten by one of these monsters and then suddenly has a sword, why didn't he get the sword out before he got eaten?
Sol.
Because that's his final form.
Sol gets eaten.
Sorry, Sol, yes.
I just got the feeling that like when you're fighting a boss and then the second stage pops in and suddenly they have a new weapon, that's what I felt with Sol at that point.
Oh, because he's Sol bad guy. Yeah, okay, I get it.
Yeah, do you see? Because villain. He just starts to fight. He's like, this isn't even my final form.
Yeah, hopefully he gets to do more, because he is the original protagonist. Following the incident, Sol's partner, Jacko, starts making a move to help out. The Valentine sisters fight off soldiers who plant bombs on the barrier at the castle, and Unica manages to recreate the key. Oh no! Despite a warning from Baiken, Sin still won't give up on Unica, and her mentions of seeing the future where humanity is destroyed by gears gives them another lead. That's the end of the episode.
Well, this episode, Ace told me to watch out for what Bridget is getting, what the little kid is going to call Bridget. So, having started learning Japanese, I was intrigued about what was going to happen. And the little kid says, "Yo-yo no onechan," "Yo-yo no onechan," which in literal translation of English is called, he called her the Yo-yo's big sister. And I don't know that I want to learn Japanese anymore.
Or big sister of the Yo-yo.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you like, you would, to be practical, you would translate it to big sister with the yo-yo, I guess.
Yeah, I just roughly translated it to, like, you know, the lady with the yo-yo, because I know they use nechan also to address people that are not obviously siblings, but it's just funny to me.
To me, it sounded like one-chan, which would be like an actual sister.
I mean, it's not, like, it's used very loosely in Japanese culture. I think you would have to, maybe the word kyodai, which means siblings, to, like, signify that you're related.
So does that mean that you're going to be my nechin now, Gors?
I'm not female.
I don't care. You said it's been used loosely.
It would be Nisan, Nichan, if I'm a brother.
Fine, I guess you can be Nisan.
Onichan goes.
Hi. Episode 3. Opens with Unica gaining access to an orbital cannon, which I assumed to be the weapon, which later is revealed it's the weapon, so whatever. We cut to Valentine sisters finding out that the bombs were a spell formula to lift the barrier, and Elfeld, unable to sit on her ass, sets out to catch the villain herself, while Jacko launches her own investigation. There was some cleavage. A lot of cleavage.
This episode was mostly cleavage. Anyway.
Sol and Sin detect science in the desert and get engaged by soldiers sent by the president to retrieve them. They are saved by Nervo, the racist from episode 1, who gives Sin a suspicious handshake, just like episode 1. Oh no!
Oh no.
Oh no!
Sin's 5-year-old brain decides that Nervo seems like a decent guy and calls Sol a grouchy fuck for warning him he's being tricked. Elfeld finds a compound full of dead people and gets nuked by the orbital cannon from the start of the episode. Dad and son follow the traces of science to ruins of a city. Sin learns about his heritage as a command gear, and a call from Jacko informs them about Unica's next target, Illyria. Tensions rise as Illyria gets evacuated, and the president of the United States, or is it just America, learns he has traitors on the inside. I had to scroll to the side to see what was the last word.
Is there any fiction involving the US president where there's some mole working against them? I mean, in real life, they're all working against themselves. We've seen that in practice. But in fiction, at least.
Well, I mean, it already happened in Guilty Gear Strive in the game already, in the storyline before this anime, where Happy Chaos took over, like, US agents, and yeah, they had to make the White House fly.
Stop telling us about the Flying White House and tell us about the Flying White House.
You need to play the game. Actually, you don't need to play the game because the story of the game is basically an animated movie that you watch. There's no gameplay.
Is this anime just the cutscenes from the game?
No, actually, it's better than the game.
We'll probably get into that in the next section.
They find Unica, and Sin tries to convince her to stand down. She gets mad at him when he reveals to her he is a gear and injures him during the fight when he tries to stop her from attacking the soldiers and after her. Sin is adamant he is not there to fight and won't let another war happen, leading to her having a vision or flashback about her father?
I thought it was the same vision that they shared in the previous episode.
I get the same feeling.
Maybe. Saul shoots Unica with a Civil War rifle and makes her... just forget it. I just added the Civil War rifle part because it looked old. Saul shoots Unica and makes her fall off a building, causing Sin to make a giant dead gear move to try and save her. Johnny and Baiken seize the recording of the event taken with intent to cause panic. And in post-credits scene, injured Unica encounters Bridget in an alley. The end.
Okay, I didn't say this at the time because I thought you might bring up that giant gear on the building. Chekhov's gear.
Oh, yeah.
Because Sin says, maybe I could control that and bring it back to life. Saul's like, no, do not try that.
Shut up. Go to your room. You're not getting to command gears. Only your grandma can do that.
His 10-year-old grandma, probably.
So
actually, yeah, we shouldn't get into the lore.
So was this a good adaptation?
There was a lot of fighting, and that's all I know about Guilty Gear.
Yeah, but was there enough fighting to be a fighting game adaptation?
Well, I know the cutscenes have a lot of story, so Guilty Gear has a lot of story too, so I'd say yes.
Yeah, I think it was a good adaptation, like good amount of action and story. It definitely helped that it seems to progress pretty quickly, which I'm not sure how much of the duration and how frequent are the fights, but I didn't feel like they were too spread apart.
So based on the first three episodes, is it a Yata, Nani, or a Baka, Artura?
This is a definite Yata for me. I think this is one of the more confident ones I've given. The animations are beautiful. The fighting scenes were really fun. And I did take a bit of a problem with the narrative because about halfway into episode two, maybe. Yeah, around episode two, I started feeling like I was watching a movie, right? Like, the plot is very convoluted for something that's only in its third episode. So it's like, it just keeps ramping up the stress. At episode two, they already get, like, the ultimate anti-gear weapon. It's like, well, what now? Where are we going from here? But otherwise, I was hooked, and I liked it, and that's a Yata for me.
Angles?
Yeah, it's also a Yata for me. Like, definitely. I was wondering, because I like have history with the games. I reviewed the newest one and gave it like a 10 or something.
And forced us to talk about it on the Game of the Year podcast.
I'm sorry.
That you can find in the comments below.
For 3 hours out of the total runtime.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that's why I asked if you'd like to write the notes, because you'd be able to give context, like the fact that one of the characters is 5.
Or that the White House is 5. Oh, wait, no, that was still just in
the anime. I actually didn't know off the top of my head that he's 5, but I knew that he like was quite young, and I had to check just how all this. He a surprise that he's just 5.
For me, it is also a Yata. It manages to change tones much better than Pharmacia, the previous episode, did. The funny bits are funny, the serious bits are serious. There's no confusion between them. The action sequences are excellent. Perhaps the best we've seen in a fighting game adaptation anime. But I do like Dragon Ball Z unironically. So there might be some of my preference for those than just, you know, kick, punch. It's all in the mind. The mix of sketch backgrounds and CGI characters is surprisingly good. But I did have one problem. The camera's always zoomed in really close to the characters.
Yeah, I noticed that a few times. And I thought, like, that's a stylistic choice, definitely. And I wondered if they didn't push it quite far enough for it to come across as a stylistic choice, and it might just be jarring.
We need to fit as many muscles in this shot as possible.
That imply that you should do it further back? So the artist was just tired of drawing muscles, is what you're telling me.
Well, the muscles were pre-modeled, so they already had them rendered. They didn't need to draw them. They were like, they didn't want to come across as lazy, so they did a lot of close-ups. I'm not gonna flaunt that I have already a full 3D model of a character and I can show them off all the time. I'm gonna make close-ups and show you
how detailed these models are.
Speaking of details, I actually spent a lot of time looking at the character models from the game, from Strive, and like down to face details, and especially like for anime characters, a lot of the time eyes are drawn very specifically. Like each character might has their specific eye pattern, and they replicated those perfectly in the show, which they might just be using the models from the game. I don't know. I think the models that they used in the anime are much more expressive, much more face expressions anyway.
So will you continue watching this?
As is usual with my answers in this section, I'm learning Japanese, even though the Yo-Yo's big sister kind of threw me off a little bit. But on the note, you know, being able to understand what was happening, I really liked it. And I'm getting closer to it. And being able to understand a lot more in this anime, probably yes for me. And it might be one of the first ones I pick up once I've properly grasped Japanese.
Yeah, I'd like to keep watching it. I most definitely will. I might rope someone in to watch it with me who's not familiar with Guilty Gear. Because, I thought it did... Actually, I'm not sure if we asked the question how... Did you feel like you weren't quite up to speed most of the time? Because I felt like, I had to write the synopsis for each episode. So the immediate story, I feel like it was easy enough to understand, like without paying attention to lore details and stuff like that. I could understand, like, who's the villain, who's the hero, what objectives people have, etc., without thinking about the backstory.
While I do have questions, I've brought up several of them throughout this episode, but I can't say that it didn't inform me of the things I needed to know.
Except for the White House.
That's something I'd like to know, but no. It's not important for understanding the story.
No, I beg to differ.
You know, now that I think about it, unless this comes up in a later episode, they didn't need to have the little cut in that Saul Bad Guy and the president fought together aboard a flying White House, because the exchange, like, they're... It's like they're giving context to one to the other saying, oh, I owe you one. Oh, no, we're even. Something like that. That kind of exchange. And like you can perfectly infer what the relationship is from that exchange. You don't need that context that they were in a flying White House.
So you're telling me that this might be Chekhov's flying White House?
I mean...
to bring it back in a later episode.
I mean, from just the exchange, I figured, oh, they fought together in the Crusades. You're right; they did not need to mention the Flying White House.
Yeah, it was pretty clear.
So yeah, on my Animalist, the score is 5.81. That's wrong. That's rough.
Is what it is.
When I looked, there was 4 reviews and only 3 of them are public. And I think it's 1 positive and 2 negative. And I feel like the negative stuff that they said are like really, really unfair. Like, I think it's something Ace mentioned about backgrounds being like sketch drawing kind of thing. I feel like those are those look perfectly good.
Yeah, they look great.
I mean, the complaint that says that you can't keep up with what's happening is like, I'm sorry, but I disagree. I mean, yeah, we're making jokes about the Flying White House and all that, but I grasped everything I need to know to understand what's happening in the story. Obviously, if we knew more of the characters, it would be far more impactful, but that's a given with pretty much anything that's adapted from another source.
As we know, because we work for Game Grin and publish reviews, reviews are entirely subjective. They're your opinion on something. That opinion's just wrong.
You're not allowed to have that opinion.
Yes, like I like to say, opinions are like assholes, mine are right. which is something I'm quoting someone else, but they're not gonna ever hear this podcast, probably. I love you, Mike. He'll know that it's for him.
That's about it for this episode. Thank you for joining me on Goose.
Thank you so much for having us.
And thank you for listening to the Pals Anime Lounge. And yeah, thank you for subscribing wherever you found this episode. You can find more from us on GameGrin.com, finding us on social media, or listening to the Grincast podcast. Until next time, game on.